Welcome to the Banjo Studio Podcast from Banjo Studio, your source for the finest in North American-made banjos and Collins guitars and mandolins. Go to banjostudio.com on the web for an incredible selection of instruments and accessories. Hello. In this week's episode, recorded May 14th, 2020, we speak with Riley Bogus, an old-time guitarist, banjo player, fiddler, and singer. He is influenced particularly by the Round Peak style of Surry County, North Carolina.
Why don't you tell us about the kind of banjos you play? Everyone's interested in that. I'm always interested because I'm dealing with so many different kinds of banjo players.
Well, what I play is it's an open back. It has no resonator. It's open back. This one happens to be a 12-inch diameter pot. Often they're 11. This one's 12. Lots of old-time banjo players play a 12-inch just because it gives a different tone. I make my own banjos. I've been building my own banjo since 1995. Mm-hmm. Built one and went out and started playing, and people started saying, "Hey, I need to get you to build me a banjo." So I would often sell them the one that I was playing, and then I wouldn't have a banjo, so I'd have to go build another one. So that's how I got started in the banjo building end of it. And it just feels really good to be playing an instrument professionally that you make from scratch, you know?
Yeah. Was this, when you learned, were these the first banjos that you would came across playing too? Were they in that style? Were they made that way? Or did you work your way into that?
Well, you know, growing up, I played a variety of things. I played, you know, I had an old K that we got at a pawn shop. But if you look over my shoulder there, you can see next to the Hart Jr. calendar, you see that's actually the first banjo that I played. It was one that my dad and I built out of some scrap 1-inch pine boards that we had laying around, and I told him I wanted to learn to play the banjo, and he didn't have money to afford to buy one for me, so we kind of made one, and that was what I first started on. But then got an old K at a pawn shop, and played, you know, lots of the old Fairbanks and the Coles and the Stewarts and Dobsons and things that people had. And then there was a maker in Galax, Virginia, who was pretty well known, whose name was Kyle Creed. Got to play several of his banjos. And through all that, I kind of was absorbing the qualities of each of these instruments that I liked, uh-huh, and tried to kind of design that into my own.
Uh-huh. So, let's see. Once you have a banjo, you have to have all these songs and stuff. And I understand you come with a great background of that. What was your knowledge of songs and stuff by the time you started playing? By the songs and all the music of the region? I know that you sang a cappella. We've read that many places, the acapella.
Well, my family they're all from the Blue Ridge Mountains. They're all from Allegheny County, North Carolina, near a town called Sparta. It's a pretty rural, agriculturally based county up in the mountains. And they always enjoyed what they called string music. Now, for them, string music did not mean violins, violas, cellos. It meant banjos, fiddles, and guitars, and mandolins. They liked acoustic, hillbilly, country music. And that's kind of what I grew up listening to, because those were the records my dad had. Mm-hmm. But we also had, you know, regular country music that you would hear on the radio, which is now considered classic country music. Uh-huh. Yes. But we had country music, we had folk music, we had blues. But we had a lot of string band type music, fiddles and banjos and things like that, both bluegrass and old time. Mm-hmm. And those two categories kind of break down. I mean, not so much in certain circles nowadays, because the old time music and the bluegrass musicians are kind of coming together in a lot of circles. You know, I mean, I get to work with Tim O'Brien from time to time, and that's cool to be able to do, you know, to play old-time banjo with a very well-known bluegrass player, you know, uh-huh, and have that all meld. But that was what I grew up listening to. So I had all this music in my head. I just didn't have a way to get it from here to here. Uh-huh. And had the opportunity to start taking violin lessons in school. They offered a strings program when I was 10 years old in fifth grade. But I soon discovered that Dvorak's Slavonic Dances is not what I was really interested in. I thought they were going to teach me to play the fiddle. Uh-huh. I was sorely mistaken. But still continued listening to the old stuff, and that's what, the old time stuff, and that's what I really wanted to do. But kind of, it was much easier to have an outlet as a bluegrass player because there were all these books you could get on how to play, you know, Scruggs style, three finger style, and there was all this music on the radio that was bluegrass. And it wasn't until, I mean, I was still trying to play old time, but I didn't really get a good handle on it until I was about 15 years old and started going up to visit an old man named Tommy Gerald, mm-hmm. up in Surry County, North Carolina. Yeah. Friend of mine, Kirk Sutphin, and I used to make trips up there to visit Tommy, and it was only about a half an hour away, so it kind of felt like it was in the community, you know? Uh-huh. And since we were both of that sort of same culture, that Blue Ridge Mountain culture, we kind of felt like we fit in there. We understood the food and the stories and the colloquialisms, and you just feel comfortable and at home, you know? Yeah.
So, and Tommy Gerald, when you were learning from Tommy Gerald, learning directly from somebody like that, what sort of thing were you learning, both banjo-wise? I mean, banjo, there's technical ends, but there's also stuff for the song delivery and music, I'm sure. There's all kinds of features, but I'm not wondering what you were learning.
Absolutely. You're learning how to sing a song, how to put power behind your vocals, when to play stronger and when to hold back. You're learning etiquette about when to let other people in the circle shine, because in the old time world, we don't really take solos. Uh-huh. We all play at the same time, but often people put a little more emphasis on their part, or the singing, you know, the singing takes the lead, or the fiddle takes the lead, and you have to know what not to play. You know, it's a sort of a matter of taste. You try to learn that taste. That's a lot of what we were working with. Basically trying to learn when to not play. Mm-hmm. You know, I've made a pretty good career out of overplaying, you know.
It's hard if you have such instrumental talent, you know.
That's right. Actually, you just play what you can and hope that some of it fits. That was a, you know, but yeah, and you know, hanging out with Tommy and the folks that lived there in his community, they were just a wealth of knowledge about old times, about history, about local legend and superstition and just all kinds of information that you just weren't going to get from the kids at school who were listening to The Cure or you know, it wasn't the same. You know, going to high school and then going there, it was really like sitting around with my grandparents, listening to them tell their old stories. They used to tell these haint tales, you know, they called them haint tales. And what it was ghost stories, haunt tales. And they would have all those kids just, you know, just totally gripped in their story. And that's sort of what it was like listening to Tommy talk and listening to the old folks from around the community tell their stories and tell about old people they knew or used to play music with or things that happened to them when they were young, you know, out playing music. And it was pretty deep well of knowledge.
Let me ask a question. Do you have kids from your area coming to see you to have to find out the same things nowadays?
Well, not necessarily so much from the area, but I get folks from all over, you know. I get contacted on iMessenger a lot. I get lots of emails. You know, it's different now. You don't have to make those in-person sojourns into the deepest, darkest hollers in Appalachia. You can get on the internet and email a guy and say, hey, you want to Zoom with me? You know?
Right.
I did a banjo lesson just before getting together with you.
Oh, great.
Totally Zoom. You know, I'm going to do one on Monday with a lady in British Columbia. So, it's not like it's so community centric anymore. We are a community as old time musicians, but it's just that our community is sort of spread out.
Spread out. Yeah. It's just interesting, Kira. I sort of presume that, but it's always interesting to hear that change. I mean, especially because we talked so much about tradition and old timey stuff, and this is a good place to talk about that term. And then, and also, I mean, I would imagine that your level of playing the music really in the present, that the term that it's older than now is these are interesting terms. That's really, I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about that, you know?
Right. Older than now. well, I guess, you know, in that respect, all music is old time music. It's like the comedian who said, you know, did you ever hold up a picture and go, hey, this is a picture of me when I was younger. Every picture of you is a picture of you when you were younger.
That's right.
Yeah. Right. So it's all relative.
Right.
So all music is old time music, given perspective, you know. But the music that the people that I was hanging out with in the 80s, the stuff that they would call old time would be music from the 1940s back to, you know, the 1800s. To the 1800s with those tunes that were passed from person to person. The recording industry changed some of that, the recording industry and radio. Then the tunes kind of got newer and newer and newer, but they were still old.
Uh-huh.
And now you've got tunes that people wrote in the 70s, in the 1970s, and people said, oh, that's a great old-time tune. Well, it is, because it's written in a style.
Uh-huh.
I often use this analogy: old time doesn't necessarily equal old.
Uh-huh.
It's not like these songs that we play and call traditional songs or traditional old time. It's not like they just burst into the ether one day. Mm-hmm. I mean, somebody made them up. Mm-hmm. You get this idea with a lot of players nowadays that, oh, well, you can't play that. That's not an old time song. It was written in 1984. Well, sure, it's an old time song. You're playing it on an old time instrument and you're playing it in an old time way. And it was written to be in that style.
Uh-huh.
Because it's made up doesn't mean that it's not old time. You know, you get a lot of that attitude. A lot of times people sort of they claim ownership of the music, and this is the way it is, and this is the only way that it can be. And this, I just don't see it that way. I like playing music, you know. It doesn't matter how old is, as long as it's good. I stopped trying to play perfect music and really strive to play good music.
I think
question sort of somewhere in there.
Oh no, I think that does it good, and it moves things actually in a good direction. Like you were saying, 70s can be old time, and I did see that you had done John Lennon's Mother on a recent record in 2009.
I did,
and you know, should be, you know, as old time as a Beatle is now.
Right. Well, he would be old, and he's dead, so he fits two of the criteria, right?
Right. Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
I did Ben Nichols' Last Pale Light in the West as well. Uh-huh. He's from Lucero, you know? And I've gained a lot of fans who are Lucero fans now because I did Ben Nichols' song. Uh-huh. You know, it's kind of like, you know, I know a lot of people who are into old-time music because of the Grateful Dead. Mm-hmm. They'd never heard old time music until Jerry started playing old time songs.
Right.
Well, then they started delving into where that came from. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the same thing is happening with musicians now, younger old time musicians, and of which I'm not younger anymore. I used to be one of the young old time musicians.
But, I know the feeling.
You know, yeah. Yeah, I used to be the kid. Hey, you heard that kid play the banjo? You know, you know, I think that's sort of happened. And people take the music of their time, the things that move them, and they put it in this style. It's like a lot of the old time tunes that we know as traditional old time tunes that were learned from some old guy, like in the mountains of Tennessee or in Kentucky, they learned from the radio, mm-hmm. and they would have been, you know, country swing tunes at the time that they learned them. They just happened to put them on old time instruments. We have a song called Lazy John, mm-hmm. that actually comes from Johnny Lee Wills, Bob Wills' brother, mm-hmm. And it was set to a country swing beat. But now it's an old time song, and people play it. There's a song called Sweet Sunny South that was written in the late 1860s or in the early 1870s, and it was meant to be a parlor tune. It was published sheet music that you were meant to play on the piano, you know, and sing the song that went with it. And we do it as an old time tune. I learned it from Tommy Gerald, you know. Wow. So, but that same sort of thing is happening. People are finding the music that moves them, and they apply it to the old time instruments. Well, not every song is going to work, but some songs do. And if enough people like it and pass it from person to person, well, that becomes a traditional song eventually, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting too. You know, it's a good segue, and then maybe we'll hear you play a song because you got the banjo there, and we actually haven't gotten to do that on our program yet. All the people that I've done, sometimes I play some music, but we haven't gotten to hear anyone play live, which would be wonderful. But I think it's a good place to put in, you know, the English musicians like John Lennon, and you played with Robert Plant and these people, they actually did do some looking through America to find all this music. They actually go some distance to really look around. And obviously, clearly, in the case of Plant and some people like that, they're still looking. If they find you and they're looking, they're going deep in there, which isn't different than the old days of going to find Tommy Jarrell or something. So I'm trying to find out a little bit about that, about engaging with folks from that period, the old time folks from England, searching old time music.
Well, you know, that's interesting that you bring that up. I, having talked with Robert Plant and with John Paul Jones a fair bit, they would relay these stories about how people would look down on them back in the day playing these old blues songs, you know. It's like, oh, you can't do it. You're not doing it right. That's not right. That's not the way it goes. But how many hundreds of thousands, millions of people know those old songs those verses that might have come from Robert Johnson, you know, because they heard Led Zeppelin, you know? Those guys have kind of looked back at the old time music and gone, oh man, you know, this is cool. You know, this is kind of what we were doing when we were young, and this is what people are doing. You know, young people are doing now. They're playing this old music. Well, we want to be part of that, and they are. You know, John Paul Jones plays banjo and mandolin, and I think he plays fiddle too. He's taken some fiddle lessons from some folks that I know, and he's into old time music. Same way Robert Plant got into it. Just talking to him, he seems to have had a great time, you know, doing that project with Alison Krauss a few years ago. I mean, he plays harmonica and, of course, guitar and stuff, and he likes those old-time songs.
Yeah.
Again, it comes back to that whole thing of good music.
Yeah.
You know, that we like music that is good music. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason that a lot of these songs and these old verses have lasted for, you know, a couple of hundred years. Some of them even older than that, you know. It's because they're good and people like them and they move them and people remember them. Mm-hmm. Music is good. The music that's good is the music that moves you, you know.
Yeah. I think there's also like a wonderful sort of ongoing humility with people that still try to seek it out and learn it, you know, that, you know, no matter what the level of attainment is, it's kind of a wonderful, you know, so that when you're talking about John Paul Jones and stuff like that, go ahead.
I got to do a record, T-Bone Burnett called me in to do a record with Willie Nelson a few years ago called, it was Willie Nelson Country Music. Uh-huh. And talking to Willie, I mean, Willie was, he was 70, I think he was 77 then. And one of the first things he said to me was, Riley, he said, my grandpa played the banjo. He said, I love the banjo. Wow. So people, you know, it has, people have fond memories of hearing old time songs on, you know, a banjo or on a fiddle or something. It took him back to a time when he was a kid. Mm-hmm. So he was really into doing it because it gave him these good memories of back when things were a certain way for him. And took him to the memory of someone he loved, mm-hmm. you know, his grandpa. So that was pretty cool just to have Willie just turn to you and say, you know, my grandpa played the banjo. I love the banjo. Uh-huh. So that's pretty fun.
Yeah. It draws you in quick. How about you play us a little bit of banjo so people can get a little,
I can do that.
Wonderful.
That part I got. The talking part,
Oh, you're doing great on there, too.
How about a... What if I sing a song as well? Would that be all right?
No, I would love it. Absolutely, we'd love it. I want to apologize to people listening for the sound, but we're on Zoom now because it's the lockdown, so...
But and I'm using...
It's like a new kind of old recording.
And I'm using one of those high quality iPad microphones, you know, that's probably blocked by the case somewhere along the way. Right. So I have that high end sound system going on.
One day in the future, people will be looking to imitate it for authenticity.
Yeah, that's it. They'll be trying to recreate this sound on purpose. You have people now who will record old time songs and actually add in the scratches and the hisses from the 78s.
Yeah.
So it sounds like the 78s.
Yeah, you can make part of the noise.
It's great. Banjo players and ham radio operators, we all tend to geek out about our things, you know? You ought to go to a ham radio meeting sometime. I'm a ham radio operator. It's just like talking to banjo players.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I'm going to do Undone in Sorrow, a song by Ola Bell Reed, which, again, is one of those new songs that is part of the old-time, you know, tradition.
Wonderful.
I'll go away and I'll wonder bridges, undone in song. Oh, I remember, undone in song.
That is wonderful. Thank you so much for that.
Oh, thank you.
Really, really wonderful. And I think actually that's, is this a song you must have known for a very long time in your life, huh?
No.
Well, actually, you said it's newer, but you know, you did say that. But.
Yeah, well, Ola Belle Reed was a contemporary songwriter. And she was an old-time musician back in the 1930s. She was from Ashe County, North Carolina, which is the county next to where my family's from. But she's a very well-known songwriter who always wrote old-time songs about situations in the mountains near where she lived and things in her own life. She wrote High on a Mountaintop and I've Endured, which are a couple of very well-known songs. Undone in Sorrow, she wrote one called I'm Going to Write Myself a Letter that people know in the bluegrass world and in the old time world. Uh-huh. I've probably only known this song for maybe 30 years.
Only 30.
Which seems like a long time. But
yeah.
But it's not that long in the grand scheme.
Yeah, that's right. And you were an adult when you learned it.
That's right. And I was an adult when I learned it. Exactly.
Yeah. So this is a good place to talk about another thing, which is the style in which you play. I've heard this, it's Round Peak style is what they say on the old internet. I found that out.
And I want to know a little bit about
what the features are of that and what's involved in finding that style.
All right. Well, what I'm doing, the big picture is what I'm doing is called claw hammer, as opposed to three finger style or two finger style. It pretty much means you hold your hand in the shape of a claw, and then you hammer down. You know, it's all downstrokes for the most part. There are some styles that have upstrokes, but for the most part, claw hammer is all downstrokes. The thumb gets involved to play the in-between notes, you know, or the eighth notes. We do a technique called drop thumb. Now, what happens is that you have a basic rhythm, and that's your basic rhythm for everything that's in 4/4 time. Uh-huh. You just have to work around that with the melody. Sometimes the melody notes come on the offbeat, you know, and you just have to... You have to work all that together. So the round peak style, the round peak style of claw hammer banjo comes from one small community in Surry County, North Carolina, near Mount Airy. There is a community that is around this little mountain that has a round top. So they call it Round Peak. That's what it's called. And in that surrounding community, they combine a certain repertoire with specific techniques. Now, every banjo player that lives there plays every one of the tunes differently than each other. Uh-huh. But they still play within a style. And it has to do with techniques and drive. There's a certain drive that this music has in that area. It's a danceable music, and it has emphasis on the front edge of the first beat, you know, it has a specific drive and a pulse to it that other styles of old time music in the mountains don't. Mm-hmm. But that's not to say that any one is better than any other. It's just different.
Yeah, it's its style.
Right. It's just its style. Exactly. Uh-huh. And we use a lot of this technique that where we use the fifth string as a melody note, rather than just having it be a drone note all the time. Uh-huh. It's like, for instance, you might do something like,
beautiful.
So that's you know, that's sort of Round Peak style in a nutshell. You're playing mainly the high spots of the tune. You don't try and play every note that the fiddle player would play. You are primarily a backup instrument for the fiddle. You're providing melodic backup as well as a rhythm for the fiddle to play to. It gives everybody, all the dancers, something to dance to. An old guy we used to spend a lot of time with named Dix Freeman. He would always say, you got to give them something to hit the floor by, you know? So that was his way of saying, yes, you have to provide them with the appropriate rhythmic place to put their foot down on the floor.
Right. You know, I have seen you performing with dance with Ira Bernstein and so many kinds of music in the world. Some kinds of music in the world have a very, very close relationship between the dancing and the music and what the relationship is between how the music, between the forms of the two are quite intertwined. And so I'm wondering about that in relation to what you're talking about, because you said it's a danceable style. And so that must be rather particular. Are there particular dances that are from that region or?
Well, it was really fun working with Ira, because Ira Bernstein is probably the best flatfoot style dancer that I know of. Flatfoot being the style that's, you know, most prominent in the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, Virginia, Tennessee, the southeastern mountains. It's different than clogging in that clogging is usually a group sport, you know, or a group effort. And flatfooting is what you would do by yourself. You know, you just keep in time to the music, and people develop lots and lots of different steps and different ways of creating rhythm. The dancer is actually a musician as well. They're the percussion. Mm-hmm. We don't really have drums per se. You know, we don't have barons or drums or sand blocks or cymbals or anything to create rhythm with. The instruments and the dancers are what make that rhythm. And Ira he always said he had sort of a Pan Appalachian style, in that he learned. He was from, you know, Long Island, New York, but he learned from a lot of Southern dancers. And he is such a good sponge that he could pick up what they were doing and get that feel. That's when we were, you know, just hanging out as teenagers or whatever at some of the old jam sessions, maybe at Tommy's house or somebody else's house or Robert Sykes' house or something, there would always be people who dance. They would be flat-footing, and they're making a rhythm. And it doesn't matter how intricate or how simple that rhythm is, they're part of the jam session that way. You know, they may not play fiddles and banjos and guitars and mandolins, but they could keep rhythm with their feet. And the music and the dance has a direct relationship. The two belong together in my mind. A good dancer adds as much to the jam session as, you know, a good guitar player or a good banjo player, or a good fiddle player. Uh-huh. They're directly related. The dancing is such an important part of the tradition in the Southern Mountains.
When you, there's one more question I wanted to ask you, for my own interest, but I think it might interest people. I was listening to the way you played Shady Grove on your record, and
right.
There's an incredible way that that's turned around from the regular way that you would normally hear people sing it. And I'm wondering what your approach is to turning it around like that, which is a fantastic set of variations, and whether that comes from a particular place or whether you came up with that.
No, what I play is based on a player whose name was Wade Ward, and he was from up near Galax, Virginia. He was a very well-known banjo player and fiddle player. And when he played Shady Grove, that one part sort of wraps over itself.
Yeah.
He didn't play it out in full song form. It's more fiddle tune form than song form. You know, and when we do songs, we tend to keep things very square. Uh-huh. And the number of beats even, whether it's 12 beats or 16 or 32, everything tends to stay normal. And you don't necessarily have to do that with a fiddle tune.
Uh-huh.
Because everybody just learns the tune as it is. You're not trying to count like a singer. there are no lyrics or anything that you have to worry about fitting into a space. Huh. You just learn the melody as it is. Now, what was difficult about that is that having heard the melody to Shady Grove so long in song form, to try and turn it into fiddle tune form the way Wade did it by sort of coming in a little more quickly in that one part. Let's see, what's it like? You have to go right back into it rather than giving it that pause and counting that beat, you know, or giving it those extra beats as you would if you were singing it. So it can kind of screw with your mind a little bit, you know. It gets a little screwy going, oh, no, wait, no, do I got it now? Yeah. Oh, no. Dang, I missed it, you know.
Yeah.
But it's fun. It's just another thing that makes it fun to play music. And that's what this music was all about. That's all. The only thing that old time or traditional music is about entertainment, entertaining oneself, entertaining the people who are listening, and being able to express yourself through an art form. Everybody can't draw or carve or do clay or dance. Mm-hmm. So some people play music, and it's a form of self-expression.
Yeah.
But it is about entertaining yourself.
Uh-huh.
I can sit here on my front porch and play the banjo all day, and I don't have to worry about whether anybody else likes it or not. It makes me giggly inside.
Yeah.
You know, you hear just to hear the sounds, and it's a lot like I describe it often as when I was a kid, this was like our video games because we didn't have video games.
Right.
Because you would start learning the tune and you would mess it up, and then you'd know, man, I'm going to get it next time. I'll get it next time. So it gave you that same, you know, you had that same sense of accomplishment, that joy, that thrill of getting that melody line right. Mm-hmm. You know, the next time through, it's like passing the levels in Super Mario Brothers, you know. Uh-huh. Oh, boy, I got all the coins. I got through the tube, and now I get to go to level two. You know, it's the same idea. Uh-huh. I guess it's a lot like playing slot machines. Every once in a while, you hit the jackpot.
Wait, in this case, you get to keep the money. So what?
That's right. All of it. All tens of dollars of it.
Tens of dollars of it. I will let you go. And it's been wonderful talking to you. Maybe you'd like to play just a little short thing again so people can get an idea. And I'll leave you there if you feel like.
I would love to play another tune. Let's see. Tell you what, I'll play you what is often referred to as the National Anthem of Surrey County.
Okay.
It's a tune that no good Surrey County round peak session would be without. It's called Sally Ann.
Okay.
And thanks so much. It's been a really fun interview.
Good, baby. Thank you. Thank you very much, Riley Blogus.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Have a great day and good luck to you out there.
Right on. I'm looking forward to getting to hear the podcast.
Yes, it'll be up soon, and we'll get you a copy, of course.
Outstanding. Thanks so much.
Take care.
And stay safe. Wear your mask. You put a shower curtain up in the shower, right?
Yep.
The floor dry. Works the same way.
Love it. That's right. There you go. There's good sense for you.
Okay. All right.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to the Banjo Studio Podcast with your host, Jonathan Frelick. Head over to banjostudio.com for a great selection of American-made banjos and Collings guitars.